when I drew it, I wanted to make sure I didn't get Clive too close to that chainsaw. But I want to welcome Jeff up for the message. Let's enjoy this one this morning.
I got a chainsaw and a Bible and a baby. That's like an intro paragraph to like something bad in Texas. That is interesting there. We are starting a new set of sermons today called The Simple Life. We are going to talk over the next several weeks about what it might mean to live a little bit leaner, to live a life that's a little less complicated, and we want to put in front of you some tangible steps for action to simplify your life. Every now and then, sometimes people say that ministers are like too philosophical or too in the clouds or debating how big the ark was and all that stuff. Everything we're going to talk about the next 4 or 5 weeks, you are going to be able to put into practice by the time you get home. We are going to talk about some real clear, tangible action steps you can take to simplify your life. Because as Chris already said, life is kind of complicated. I like to do little participatory surveys that make everybody feel uncomfortable, so just join along with me here. Get your hand up if money is complicated for you. Get your hand up if family is complicated for you. Now get 2 hands up if in-laws are complicated for you. Kids, sports schedules, homework that you could never get out of 7th grade today that you help your kid with? All right, hands down. It's into that vacuum of our overcomplicated, overstretched, overconsumed life that we want to dig into in a real tangible way. I have something I want to show you. I have something I really want to show you. I got a box here. And there was this window of our life in 2011 when we accumulated almost everything that's in this box. And so I'm going to pull it out, and if you had one of these, maybe clap along with me. But I just want to show you, these are all gadgets, toys, gizmos, things that we bought in 2011. I was never more than a few feet away from my laptop. Anybody got a laptop? Laptop, I remember when I thought this was like the smallest thing a computer could ever be. And we had Wi-Fi in our house, so we thought we were like really uppity people. And also on the other side of the room, we had a computer. Anybody remember those old things? Had a computer that all my sermons and all that good stuff was on. And so I had a laptop in one side of the room wherever I was sitting. And we had a big computer on the other side of the room where we would do all of our work. And when we would get in the car and drive around Western Illinois and Eastern Iowa, it is real easy to get lost. And you get stuck behind a combine and it's like 30 minutes later until you can pass it. That is why we needed this Magellan GPS. Remember this? Plug it into your ashtray, because none of you smoke. Plug it into your ashtray and it would begin to give you directions of where you needed to go and recalculate it and you're going the wrong way and who gave you a driver's license. All that stuff would happen. And we would be at youth sporting events. And of course, you know, our son was always like 2 seconds away from becoming the next, you know, Derrick Rose or Peyton Manning or that kind of thing. So you gotta have a camera that's digital. Anybody remember digital cameras? You could take a picture and like an hour later, you could put it on your computer. And this was really fancy because it had a video camera built into it. And if you go on my Facebook page and look inside of my videos, you will find a play from football from 2011 that I will never delete. And it was came off of this camera right here. See what else I got here? Kindle. Anybody remember Kindles that were this size? That one was in my bathroom. DVDs. Anybody remember DVDs? You had to have the discs in order to watch them. And then the last one here was an iPod. You would plug this in and you could manually put on the music that you wanted. Well, then one day Marissa came home. One day Marissa came home and she handed me a box that was this big. And inside of that box was, are you ready for it? An iPhone. literally in one purchase, all of this stuff went on to this, right? You got your camera, you got your Kindle, you got your Google Maps. I have my sermons that are on my phone. I can put them on your phone if you really want me to. I've got everything that I would work on or study or use to get around all in one thing on my phone. And I could put it in my pocket and it would have more information than the Congress Library 20 years ago, right there in my pocket. But the funny thing was, after about 3 months of having this, it wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to have a phone that had all this stuff. I needed an iPad. Anybody have an iPad? Amazon Fire, all that kind of stuff. Well, it wasn't enough that I had it on my pocket. I needed it on my lap, too. Now, we had this problem in our house. At least I don't like to talk about it in public. Mom got one of these before we did. And I'm not bitter about it, but I'm bringing it back up. And we're going to talk about it for a Mother's Day gift. But I got one of these 3 or 4 months after Marissa did, and when I finally got it, I heard a rumor that the new iPad was coming out. And guess who wanted that? And after that iPhone 4 came out, I wanted the iPhone 5. Anybody here want to go from iPhone 4 to iPhone 5 as fast as you could? If you look right down there next to Chris, there's my phone, the iPhone 6. The iPhone 6. Well, to show you how much this stuff matters to us now, I'm just going to throw it all in there because I picked it up out of the garage yesterday. How much money do you think is in this tub? The answer is sin. The answer is way too much. I don't know if it made my life easier. Text messaging was just a new way for us to argue with our kids. I'm not sure that it made our life easier. But I know it took a lot of my money. I know that I put a lot of, well, maybe this new thing will fix this. I know I put a lot of hope and faith into the next upgrade. But what I finally found was there is this empty hole of consumption that we pour money and technology and upgrades in the hopes that it will do something for us. The phrase that I'm going to use over and over in this is stuff. Stuff is like the catch-all. Stuff is your car. Stuff is your phone. Stuff is the toys that you think you need as a grown man. You go ahead and fill in the blank, things that I have bought because I thought I needed them. That is all our stuff, including our money. And one of the things I know is I have a lot of authority on which to talk about this subject because I got a box to prove its failings. Consumption, accumulation, the need for what's next. It has led to a complicated, overextended life, and it has come at a price that's even steeper than the financial cost. Don't you think so? It has come at a cost that's even deeper and heavier than the financial price. My dad was 22 years old, and he was doing the very first funeral he ever did. You imagine 22 years old doing his very first funeral as a pastor. He got the call and he went down and he met with the family, talked about what they needed, and then when he got to meet with the family, he pulled the funeral home director pulled him aside and said, "There's something I need to tell you." And he told him this dark secret that the family did not want mentioned. And so when the service came, my dad stood up there behind the little podium at the funeral home, and he preached a sermon about this lovely, adorable woman that died in her late 70s. And the dark secret that they did not want mentioned, he did not mention. We can laugh about this because it was like 42 years ago. If it happened last week, you couldn't laugh, but you have permission to laugh at this. 4 feet behind where my dad stood to give the funeral sermon was the wall that she knocked down when she drove into the side of the funeral home and died. And there was a massive tarp over that wall with the wind blowing in. And the family said, "Don't talk about it. We don't want anybody to know." Now, this is small town Kentucky, where like everybody knows everything and family reunions are the same as the voting rolls. I mean, like, it is all one group of people. But they said, "Please, whatever you do, don't talk about it." Well, like I said, there were two things that were clear. It was obvious to everybody what had happened. Nobody in that room was confused about why they were there that day. Everybody knew about it, and nobody talked about it. Everybody knew it, no one would mention it. That is where I think we find ourselves when it comes to living a simpler life. Everybody knows this is true, right? Did your last iPhone save your marriage? Let's just go ahead. Yes or no? Did your last computer teach you how to pray? Did the latest upgrade fill that great hole in your heart that you want? We all know that it doesn't deliver the promises that mass marketing says it does. We all know it. It's obvious. But you know what I have found? Nobody wants to talk about it. Nobody wants to talk about it. We want to talk about other people and how they spend too much and they have too much and look at what they did. But what I want to invite you into in these next several weeks is a path to a simpler life where you find courage from God to talk about what is obvious to everyone. Here's my goal for you. This is my hope for you, really. When it comes to the simple life, when it comes to your stuff, I hope you can trust God, make better decisions, and live with fewer regrets. My hope for you when it comes to your stuff, your money, all the things that we gather, all the things that we collect, all the things that we fill our houses and our homes and our hearts with, I hope that you will learn to trust God with your stuff. And then these last two, I've never met anybody that doesn't long for these two. Anybody here want to learn how to make better decisions? Anybody here want to live with fewer regrets? I don't find anybody sitting around like, "Man, I can't wait to get divorced again. That was so much fun. I love giving attorneys 10 grand. It doesn't work that way. This is my hope for you. That you would learn to trust God and make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. The one thing Jesus talked about more than anything is our stuff. More than Jesus talked about love, which is hard to believe. More than Jesus talked about forgiving our neighbor. More than Jesus talked about peace for the world, though all those things are of critical importance to the kingdom. Jesus talked about our stuff and our money and our desire to accumulate more than anything else. So if you have a Bible, I want you to look at one of the verses that Jesus talked about this very important topic in. In Luke chapter 12, verses 13 through 15. I want to read through this little by little and talk about it as the text unfolds. So if you've got a Bible on your phone, I really want to encourage you to follow along with me. If you bring a Bible to worship, please look that up in Luke 12. Verse 13, it says, "Someone in the crowd said to him," that's Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." If you thought you had a bad brother and tattled on what you did to your parents, think about how bad this brother has to be. He goes to Jesus. He goes to Jesus and he says, "Lord, I need you to tell my brother to give me what's mine." Anybody have a sibling that took their stuff when they were little? I used to try to steal the nuggets off my brother's plate when mom and dad weren't looking. You know what he started to do when I wasn't looking? He'd lick them. And about the second time you ate a licked nugget, you weren't so hungry anymore. That's his way of getting Jesus on me. Little tool for you that are 12 years old. You learn how to do that. I'm going to teach that in kids' time next week. But he's like, teacher, I need you to get involved in this family conflict of mine. My brother's got my stuff. He inherited it all. He's obviously the older brother. They got everything in the old world. I need you to help him become more generous and give me what's mine. Verse 14. Jesus replied, man, who appointed me a judge or an arbitrator between you? I teach and preach to everyone all the time. Cry out to Jesus with your problems. Take all of your problems to God. Tell God what's on your mind. This is one of the few examples I can find in Scripture where somebody comes to Jesus with a problem and Jesus gives him a stiff arm. Now, I don't know if this is exactly the translation, but it's kind of the redneck translation. Can you imagine Jesus saying, man! All right, that's maybe not exactly what it was. Don't drag me into your problem. If you guys want to fight about stuff and about money and who's what and who's mine, don't drag me into this. How complicated must the topic be that Jesus doesn't even want to have anything to do with it? Your stuff is messy. It's got power. It's got power and it's got complication written all over it. Verse 15. Then Jesus said to them, he moves from talking to the brother to talking to the whole crowd. This is eavesdropping in on what Jesus is saying, and we get to listen in too. Watch out. When Jesus says watch out, you know what you need to do? You need to sit up. You need to straighten your back. You need to lean forward. You need to listen. When Jesus says watch out, we had better watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. I wish Jesus would have worded it a little bit differently here. I wish he would have said, be on guard against greed. I know a lot of greedy people, but I've never met anybody that says, man, I'm greedy. I can project onto other people their greed. But what Jesus says is there's all kinds of greed. There's rich people with greed and there's poor people with greed. There's people that got a lot and people that have a little that have greed. There's middle class greed, there's greed in poverty, there's greed in abundance. There is all kinds of greed. It's almost like we can't even begin to count all the ways that greed can creep in to us. Be on guard, watch out. Because life does not consist of an abundance of possessions. There's a writer that's an economist and a psychologist that I love. If you guys like to read a little bit, Google Arthur Brooks. He writes a ton. He wrote an article that I posted a few months ago from a phrase I'm going to steal here in a second. He has this phrase that I have been drawn to over the last 2 or 3 months that I want to share with you as kind of the capstone of the simple life. When we describe for these next several weeks what the simple life is, this is what I'm talking about. For Americans, simplicity is abundance without attachment. For Americans, simplicity is abundance without attachment. Brooks talks about that if you live in America, he has this whole rant, you can find it on YouTube, I won't go on about it. But he says, no matter how destitute you might feel, you won the lottery. And he said, if you don't believe me, ship your kid off to Saudi Arabia and tell me how long they last. But he says, we have more capacity and abundance and ability to thrive here as human beings than anyone in human history. Even those that suffer from poverty, which is real and which is awful and which we must work against, have access to more opportunity than anybody else in human history just by being born in Illinois. He says, we are a people that have more abundance than our grandparents could ever imagine. I think about my grandpa born in 1919 in rural Kentucky. No running water. You know why he didn't go beyond 8th grade education? That's all they offered in the school district that he lived in. When he got a car and a house, they thought he was like Steve Jobs, I guess back then, like John Rockefeller. They thought he was a millionaire because he had touched the hem of the middle class. Today, I couldn't imagine putting my family, let alone myself, into the house that he was born into just 90 years ago, 95 years ago. Think about that. We are a people of abundance. If you woke up and turned on the lights and had hot water and ate your breakfast and drove through Starbucks and then got on Facebook and complained about your life, do you realize that we are like in the top 1% of the world? All right, into the Arthur Brooks rant, but we have to lay that foundation that we are people of abundance, but we can't be people attached to that abundance. I used a phrase on accident that somebody laughed at just a couple weeks ago. I was talking about simplicity, and I said, look, dude, I'm not Amish. I remember I told you that, Sean. I am not Amish. You know, I got a car, and I got junk, and I like my satellite so I can watch football, and that's my life. I am not Amish, people. And if I had to churn that butter, our family would be hungry. But it's in that world of abundance. It's in this opportunity culture that we live in that we cannot become addicted, attached, promising our soul that it will fill us with all the abundance that we have access to. You see, the problem with this is no one thinks they're attached to what they have. None of us do. I know I don't sometimes. We do not necessarily think we're attached to what it is. But let me ask you this. Have you ever made more than your grandparents could ever dream of and still can't pay the bills? Anybody there? Then we have abundance with attachment. Has marketing ever hooked into your mind that new or upgrade or improved? Kind of like trigger something in your head. You're like, man, I need this. Then we are more attached than we realize. Here's where Jeff can be guilty. I don't want my kid to be the only one that doesn't have it. We're passing along attachment to our children at a very, very young age. Who has ever said to themselves, I would love to be generous. I would love to support ministries of human need. I would love to give more to God. I would love to support my church, but just not right now. One of these days, when I get it all together, I will. We are more attached to our abundance than we realize. I did the first of what would be 5 weddings for young couples in our church this summer, last week. That's why I was gone. And I've talked with them, and we're going to talk about it more, but the number one cause of divorce is not infidelity, though that can be real. You know what the problem is? Money. When I sit down with couples that are getting married or they come to me with a problem, 9 times out of 10, I know what the issue is. Even if they don't say it, underneath that is an attachment to what I need and what I want, and the priorities of our budget have to align with what I desire. So this is my hope for you. And I know I've kind of rambled on here for a second, so just give me, worship God with your focus here for just 90 seconds. I hope you can soak this up over the next 4 or 5 weeks, because we are going to lay out things that you can go home and do in order to simplify your life. And the reason I'm so desperate that you lean into this and the consistency of worship and the study of Scripture and the application of what we're talking about is I tried to do something like this a year ago. I listened to what I heard people saying that were a problem in their life, and the topic was suffering. About a year ago, I preached on suffering. I preached a couple. Roger preached, Chris preached, and then Clive showed up, and I preached a couple more. I talk about suffering because I was brought to me, Jeff, this is what I deal with. I don't have any good answers. I don't understand suffering. Will you help me process this? And about 2 months after the sermon series ended, I had no less than 7 people come to me and say, you know what? I appreciated what you said, but I kind of stopped coming because it was too real to deal with. And I respect people's boundaries and I respect people's triggers, but what I pray for is that this thing that has put all of us in a tiny prison, that we would ask God to open that door for us to be free. I hope you will soak up the path to simplicity. On this Mother's Day, I'm thinking about my mom, who I got to go to worship with last week, which was really, really cool. It reminded me during this wedding season for many people of what my mother used to do for a wedding present. For those of you that have been married recently, you know that like doing your wedding registry is like a big, big deal. Like you get a gun and you go to Target and you scan everything and Bed Bath and Beyond, and haven't met a couple that like went to Ducks Unlimited, but they should have that option too. But you get a long list of what the couple wants and what they desire, and this is the things that we need, and I'm just going to break the news to all y'all getting married. You know where most of that stuff's going to end up in a year? Right here. In garage sale. Get rid of it. I'll be there. You know what my mom to this day still buys every couple for their wedding? To this day, every couple that gets married, she buys them a new address book. And when I was little, I was like, Mom, that's dumb. Who wants an address book? Mom, they wanted like a microwave, back when microwaves were like a big deal. Mom, they wanted this. Mom, they wanted that. They wanted like the new blender. They wanted that. They wanted basically what's going to end up in that box. And my mom's like, no, every young couple needs an address book so they'll remember to call their mother on Mother's Day. It's like, all right, Mom, just lay it on thick. Reminds me of a joke that Roger would like, but I'll save that for another sermon. You know when you have that moment when you're like 23, 24, maybe for some of you it was 55, when you realize your parents were a whole lot smarter than you were? I, to this day, still have people that come up to me and say, you know, we've been married 23 years, and you know the one thing we still have? That address book your mom got us. That address book's got everything in it. We cross out names, we put new stuff in there, we put an addendum in the back. We got more mileage out of that $8, and that's what it was, $8 gift from Walmart than we did anything else that anybody bought us. I don't know what the address book is for your life, but I know that all of us are given choices. Whether we will take our abundance and be attached to it, or whether we will have our abundance and find the usefulness of it without it robbing our soul. Simple life is when we learn to trust God with everything. All of our stuff. And then we learn to make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. That's what I want for you. Let's pray together. Lord, we are grateful for how much you have given us. Make no mistake, we are a people of abundance. We are a people of prosperity, even in our difficulties. But God, you've given us all this not simply to fill a hole in our heart, but to be able to live a life with it that reflects our love for you and be generous with all that you've given us. So God, as we move into these next several weeks of this series and what's going on in our lives,